You're listening to the Sprues and Brews podcast, your weekly podcast looking at all things Warhammer.
Hello and welcome to episode 95 of the Sprues and Brews podcast. My name is Dave and I'm joined once again by Matt.
Hello.
And Jay.
Hello.
So on this week's episode, we're going to be talking quite a bit about our recent 40k battles that we've had. So now 9th edition, we've got the rules. We've had the rules for a couple of weeks now. We've got a couple of games in. So we wanted to have a bit of a segment this week talking about how we've got on with them, how we think it's changed, and what we really like. Maybe some stuff that we don't like. Speaking of 9th edition, our top three this week is going to be asking the question, what units do we want to add to our 40k armies? So we're going to discuss it between ourselves, and then we're going to open the floor and read out the community picks towards the end of the podcast. We also have all the latest news as well, and we've actually got some video game news this week as well. So before we get stuck into all of that, let's talk about what we've been doing in the hobby this week. So Matt, how about you start us off?
So I've not managed to do much hobbying because I've been doing lots of editing again this week. I have, however, got all the base colours down on Illuminous Eris now.
Excellent.
So he's getting there. So just needs the wash on him, then start building up the highlights. He'll probably be done tomorrow. So if we can get him out of the way, ready for all the stuff coming in Domitus. Because yeah, I've already built a load, but I'm already eager to paint some more Necrons.
Eris model as well. He's such a cool Necron character.
I don't know
what he's going to be like on the tabletop rules wise, but I mean, it is really, really nice model.
Yeah, he's going in my army regardless, just because he looks cool. that seems to be the way I'm doing my my Crusade Force. That's a cool model. I'm going to buy enough requisition points to get him in.
Excellent. Cool. He won't get any experience, though. But, yeah, I mean, he'll look awesome anyway.
He doesn't need experience, does he? He just stands there and looks ace.
Is he a HQ choice? He is a HQ, isn't he?
I've got about 18 HQ choices in my Necrons.
Is it a Supreme Command detachment you can build with all the HQ?
No, you can't. It doesn't exist anymore.
I'll have to get the detachment lists up now while we're chopsing.
Excellent. Actually, Jake, what have you been up to in the hobby this week?
I got quite a lot done this week, actually. So I started my week off by building the Lumineth Realm Lords. So I've now built my cavalry and 10 wardens and Eltharion. And I've got another 20 wardens and 10 Dawn Riders to build. I'm a bit reluctant to start putting paint on these guys because, one, I haven't completely decided on the colour scheme yet. I keep seeing people's Lumineth Realm Lords with different schemes and bouncing between one and the other. And secondly, I want to sort of paint them in like batch all together so that I get a consistent colour scheme across them. Sometimes I find if you paint something and then come back to it, sometimes it's a bit hard sometimes to match the... So that's my plan with that, and I can then base them all at the same time and things like this. Also, because they are very detailed models and they've got big shields, so I've left the shields off. So if I can get them all built to that level, and then I can spray all the shields, paint all the shields, spray all the models, paint all the models, and attach the shields and do them in one big go. So I think there was a Warhammer community... post this week, which said that they're coming in September, the rest of the ranges. So not too long to wait now for the rest of the Lumineth. I should be able to have some games with them before the end of the year then, I think.
Back in the heady days of February and March, we're eager in anticipation, ready for our Age of Sigmar narrative campaign. They were like a week or two away then, weren't they?
They were.
So I think, unfortunately, we've had to knock that back a little bit now, haven't we?
With 40k. Yeah,
so I'm sure, though, once Teclis arrives and the Mountain Spirits arrive and the Sentinels arrive and all the different characters, my enthusiasm for the Lumineth and Age of Sigmar will jump up again and I'll be desperate to get some games in. But I have to say, at the moment, I am more excited about Warhammer 40,000 9th Edition. On the Warhammer 40,000 9th Edition front, I've recently got the Psychic Awakening War of the Spider book. We did a review a few weeks back, and all the new strats in there. I was really excited to try the Custodians out again. I've not played with them for a while. And also with the changes to Ninth Edition and the CP, we'll talk more about this later on, but I really wanted to get some custodians added to my force. So I painted up a Palace Grav tank, which is like a little fast attack. It's a bit like, what was that Blight Hauler or something?
Blight Hauler, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, just like, similar to that, isn't it, really? It's a little nippy one-man vehicle that zips around, like a little land speeder. Mm. So I got that painted up, which was, it was an interesting challenge, that, because I'd painted up a Coronis Grav tank, I don't know, over a year ago now. And I used like some Games Workshop golds, some different golds from a different company, and as well as the Games Workshop golds, to create like a really sort of battered, antique looking gold, which is a bit different than the gold I use on my infantry. And I was trying to struggle to remember how I actually did it, but I think I've pulled it off. It looks identical to the Coronis Grav tank, so yeah, I'm happy about that.
Good. Yeah, I really like that metal, Jay. It looks really good. What's the gold that you've used?
So I sprayed the model straight with Retributor Gold from the can, and then I do a Reichland flesh wash over the whole model into all of the panels and things like that, basically over the whole model. I don't worry about being too neat with it like I am on the infantry. I don't mind if there's bits where it's a bit stronger than other places, although I do try to make sure it doesn't pool at the bottom of the model.
Yeah.
So I keep an eye on it while it's dry. Once that's dry, I then get some Auric Gold, which is just the Games Workshop Auric Gold. I think it's called Auric Gold. And I get one of my old brushes and I sort of like stipple it across the model.
Nice.
Quite heavily. And it just sort, you sort of get that almost like worn gold look then. And once that's done, I then get a brighter gold. I think it's called Brilliant Gold or Shining Gold or Polished Gold, something like that. I think, I can't remember what the company is now that I get it from. It comes in like a little dropper bottle. I get a little bit of that and I go over again and stipple again over all like the raised surfaces and the edges, because the custodian's vehicles are quite rounded. They're quite nice looking tanks. And that just like almost like a highlight then along the edges with the stipple. And then I get really sort of probably 50-50, 40-60 Jukari Purple and Larmian Medium. And I just use that to put some shading around like the raised Imperial Keelers and around the edges of doors and things like that, just to put a little bit of shade back onto it if I've gone a bit too heavy with the stippling. And then I use some, is it called something oxide? It's like a copper... What's the verdigris? Is it?
Oh, Nalak oxide.
I use that just along some of the panels to make it look like there's just a little bit of weathering there on there. I know gold doesn't rust, but you know.
Maybe it doesn't the far future. Looks, you never know.
Maybe it does. This isn't actually gold. It's Uramite, so, which also doesn't rust because it's Uramite. You know, it looks good.
I'm sure Dave will put up a picture as well in the post because they look really nice.
Yeah, so I got that built and painted. That's what I've done on the hobby side, apart from a couple of games we've had. So, I mean, you guys have had a game, I've had a game. But yeah, I've got quite a lot in this week.
Excellent. Well, I've, for a bit of change of pace, I was building some scenery during this week. So I'd got given for either a birthday or a Christmas the... I've completely forgotten what it's called. The Big Drill, the Gene Steeler Cult scenery piece. The Big Drill thing. So I've built that ready. This weekend, I intend to get some sprays and some acrylic paints in and start doing all my scenery, because it's about time I had my own scenery collection, especially with the new board sizes. I'm going to pick up some of the new cardboard tiles that Games Workshop are doing, so I can have some games here. And it'd just be easier if I've got my own scenery good to go. So I was doing that. The only other thing really I've done this week is I'm very nearly finished with 20 Poxwalkers. So they've been really fun to paint, because you don't really have to be super neat with Poxwalkers. And they work great with contrast. And I've really tried to make them, you know, give them different coloured clothing, and they're just so characterful as well. They're just really fun to paint.
Do you think you'll add some of the are they the Gellipox from?
Funnily enough, I was reading some stuff on Facebook at the beginning of the week, and people were talking about Gellipox. I never picked up that Rogue Trader box, and I forever, I think, will be gutted that I didn't, because I think they'd be really cool. And what some people have done as well, in I know you've got these, Matt, the commander from the Gellipox, some people have turned him into a demon prince, which works really well.
Well, Dave, there is still one on the shelves of our local Games Workshop.
Is there? Well, that is interesting. I might have to pick that up. They are really cool, and I think they'd be pretty cool to paint as well. The little glitchlings and stuff.
Yeah, they're cool.
So yeah, that's me. And of course, I've got to play both of you this week as well. But we're going to talk about that a little bit later on in the podcast. I think we'll take a slight pause at this moment and we'll come back with this week's news. And on to this week's news. What have we got, Matt?
So we've got some pre-orders for Adeptus Titanicus this week. The Defensive Riser, the new supplement for Adeptus Titanicus, is up for pre-order. This has some new Legio rules in there. The main thing in the book, though, are custom rules to create your own Titan legions.
So you can do your the Fingy Wasps now.
Exactly. I can finally do the Fire Wasps. So any of the legions that haven't been released yet, or any of your own custom ones that you want to come up with, you can create those using this book, which is really cool. Alongside this, we've also got the Cerastus Knights, the Castigators, and the Acherons. It's a box of four, which contains two of each type, which is really cool. I know you're a fan of some of those knights, aren't you, Jay?
Yeah, look, these are my favourite knights. I don't know if I like the lance the best or the one with the sword. They're very good.
So, so that's, I think that then rounds out all of the Titan and Knight variants for Adeptus Titanicus. So, leaving the door open, hopefully, for Traitor Titans and stuff like that. And then we've also got a pack of stratagem cards. They're quite useful to have as a reference in game. I do like my card based bits and bobs. Speaking of cards for Middle Earth, if you missed out on the Hobbit cards, three different sets, Good, Evil and Dwarves, because there's a lot of dwarves in the Hobbit. They're again up for pre-order on Saturday. I think the last few print runs, they've sold out very quickly though. I know these have been super popular. When we had a couple of games of Middle Earth, they were really handy to have on the table rather than flicking back and forth through the book, weren't they, Jay?
They were, yeah.
I don't know if you still got them, but they did have some plastic wallets that you could put them in and then write your remaining might, will and fate on that and then just rub it out, which is a really good idea. So they're coming out. We have also got Rune Lord Brass as a spray can. Up for pre-order on Saturday. It's obviously there's been some issue and it's missed the Indomitus release, but don't fear, by the time you've built up all your Indomitus stuff, you'll be able to spray all your Necrons Rune Lord Brass, saving about three steps from the guide that I did on the website. So yeah, and that's it. It's a fairly light week. Obviously it comes off the back of Indomitus, where I think every person's ordered about three copies of. So I think it is much a filler week this week. I was hoping that we might see some of the new 40k kits, such as the ATV and the Stalker, the Doom Stalker, is it? The big Necron construct.
Oh, yeah.
But they're not up yet. So I imagine they'll be in the next couple of weeks though. And then presumably, what was it, September for the Lumina? So we've got a few weeks to fill up stuff, haven't we?
Yeah. Is there something happening on Saturday?
That's right. So on Saturday, it's the big launch day for Indomitus. And at 1:45 on Warhammer Community and on Twitch, they've got some reveals. So presumably, they're revealing the last few Necron kits that we haven't seen yet. They did show a lot of them last time, didn't they? Like the Silent King and stuff like that. And I imagine we might see some Space Marine stuff as well, because traditionally they're one of the first codexes to come out for a new edition as well.
I was going to say, we saw the Blade Guard Veterans this week. Obviously they must be like the multi-part kit version, not the same ones we saw in Indomitus. So yeah, hopefully we see a few more Marine kits as well on Saturday, like you say.
Yeah, I think for Sigmar, the Stormcast and the Nighthaunt books dropped at the same time, we could potentially see the same for 40k.
Yeah.
It lets you quickly expand both those forces from Indomitus. So, yeah, I think that's probably what we'll see. You never know. It might be something completely different, you know, squats or something. But I think the safe money's on Necrons and Marines and in the Codex releases for them. We've also got launching on Friday, so possibly today when you're listening to this podcast, is the Warhammer 40,000 app. The My Warhammer account setup page is now live, and bar some teething issues the day it was released, the idea is it's going to be a unified account that's going to tie together all the various web stores, so Forge World, Warhammer, Black Library, and the app for your and Warhammer community as well, so you can kind of like articles and save down, you know, that article about, you know, converting up this model in a particular way that you then spend a week trying to find. You can save it down in your favorites on your My Warhammer account. So I really like the idea of that. We mentioned last week about the app. It's going to be a subscription service for the full All Singing All Dancing premium mode. So it's good that all this is tied to one account, because it does mean that if they do the same for Sigmar, at least you've got that account set up then.
Yeah.
Where sometimes if it's tied to just your, you know, your app store, you can't then access it on a computer. So I like that they've got it tied to a Games Workshop account that you can then log into various apps with.
And I've mentioned this before, one of the issues of Azir, because it's just a local, all the data's just local on your phone, when the app unfortunately stops working after a month or so, or at least the Azir part, the list building, if it's saved to the cloud, you won't have to worry about losing all your lists.
Yeah, so we'll, once we've had a play with that, we'll have a review up. But yeah, stay tuned, because that is launching imminently. We saw some more information about the next book series coming from Black Library, the Dawn of Fire series. So this is very much trying to do for 9th edition and the Indomitus Crusade what the Horus Heresy series did, a continuing saga with all the major Black Library authors involved. And the first one, Avenging Sun, is up for pre-order mid-August, I think they said, and it comes in a super shiny special edition.
Yeah.
So if you've seen the Siege of Terror books, it's very similar style. I'm going to have to resist this one, because we're talking like a 60 plus book series. I can just about stretch to an 8 book series for the Siege of Terror. But yeah, not a brand new ongoing series. I think I'd be sleeping in the shed if I did that. And then finally, we had some breaking news just before the podcast went live. A new game from Fat Shark. So if you've not heard of them before, they put together the Vermintide and Vermintide 2 games for PC and console, and their third game in the series, I suppose, is a Warhammer 40,000 take on it called Darktide. So if you head over to the website, we've got the launch trailer on there and some artwork. It's all very early alpha, and the game isn't out until next year. It will be on the Xbox Series X, and it's on PC as well. So, yeah, very much looking forward to trying this out, because Vermintide's an awesome, awesome game.
Vermintide's so cool, and it does the melee combat really well, and it also does range combat really well with, like, the Waywatch character and the Battle Wizard. So a 40k version of this game with, you know, chainsaws, power swords, and las pistols, bolters.
Yeah, well, from the trailer, it's a team of guardsmen that are going in, one with a chainsword, one with a las rifle or something, and a plasma gun, and they come across a massive tide of poxwalkers and some horrible looking Nurgle gribblies in the background. So it's, I think it's very much going to feel like Vermintide with a 40k overlay, essentially, which is, you know, that's exactly what you want from a game, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
I like that they've kept Tide in the name as well, just to tie it all together as well.
Yeah.
So, yes, yeah, so that's out next year. And that is the news, Dave.
Excellent. Some really good stuff in there. We're going to take a pause. I'm going to keep this 40k train going by talking about our recent games. So between the three of us, we've now had a few games of 9th edition. So I think we can start talking about how we're finding the system. We have had a couple of games this week, so we're going to cover those first. The first of the two games, Matt, was myself against you with the Adeptus Mechanicus against the Adeptus Sororitas.
Yeah, so this was our first match play game. We'd played Crusade before with Jay, and it was very different going into the mission, wasn't it? The way you kind of, you need to pick your secondary objectives.
It's really a whole new tactical element to the game. I put so much thought into what I was going to pick, you know, what could I achieve, and what was just going to be a waste of a secondary objective. So yeah, it was really challenging to think what I could potentially get the most points out of.
Yeah, because it's worth it saying, you know, you can get a maximum score of 100 points in 9th edition. 45 of those points can be gained from the primary objective, 45 from the secondaries, and then 10 points if you've got a fully painted force. So yeah, you can't rely on just hitting the primary objective, because, you know, if somebody gets a full score on the secondaries and you've just focused on those primaries, then you're going to lose the game. It makes it really interesting, really tactical, and really aggressive games I've found in the ones that I've played so far.
Mm-hmm. I think it's going to take some getting used to, because I think you used to be able to rock up to a game with an army build that you've got, a strategy for that game, you know, games of 8th edition, and, you know, it was almost like a lot of lists were at the top, you know, competitive gamings were built for a certain game plan. The addition of these secondary objectives that are equally as valuable as the primary objective, and the fact that you choose those secondary objectives after the mission has been chosen, I think you choose it.
Just before the game starts.
Just before the game,
and so it's that secret means as well. So you don't know what your opponent's picked until you both reveal them.
No, and I think it means that we might see less lists that are tailored to a specific playstyle and more not general lists, but a bit more flexible lists, because obviously you might want to play for certain secondary objectives depending on the mission, depending on the deployment zones, the terrain layout, the actual army you're fighting against. So I think it adds almost like an extra sort of element to when you're building your army now to think about.
I think it's going to make tournaments really, really interesting. Because like you say, that net list that you've got online, which in 8th potentially could smash things just because of how it's built. Well, if somebody throws a spanner in the works with the secondaries, then you're all out of luck all of a sudden.
Yeah, I think you need to have that flexibility to fall back on. Because then what you can do, your game plan can be then stopping the enemy from scoring too many primary objectives while you focus on secondary objectives to win the game. And obviously, if you've got a list that's built to do one thing really well, that might have got you by an 8th. But in 9th, I don't think that's going to be the case anymore. I think you're going to need units to do different things. And also the actions that you can take. A lot of the secondary objectives require a unit to almost forfeit a turn to perform an action to score those points.
Yeah, in the game with me and Dave, I had a plan. I was going to send my units both flanks. I want the big unit of mortifiers. Really, their job was to be a massive distraction and draw all the fire. Unfortunately, Dave didn't take the bait and shot my retributors off the table, which was rude. While there was two threats pouring up each side, the third unit of five sisters that nobody cares about is quietly going up, scoring those actions on objectives. Now, in our game, it didn't go to plan. A unit, you went first. My big Repentia unit was taken down to like two models. So at that point, I was like, well, they're not going to be a massive threat. I'll just sacrifice them to do that role of taking out the secondaries. Yeah. I think, like you say, you've got to be flexible and be able to adapt your battle plan on the fly. I mean, going into turn, what, 3, I was like about 20 points ahead of you, and then you had a really good turn 3 and kind of neutralised all the threats and got into position.
Yeah. I mean, but I really like that because, we've said before on the podcast, when we play Age of Sigmar, we always feel that almost every game is evenly balanced and it could go one way or the other, and they always seem quite close. Where in 40K, sometimes they just, somebody can just run away with it, can't they? And you can't find that you can make a comeback. In that game with the Admech versus the Sisters was proof that coming into 9th edition, I don't think that's really going to happen anymore, because it would have been very easy for me to think, well, that's it. Matt's got a ridiculous lead now. There's no way I can catch him. When I did. So that's really cool.
Yeah, and then going into the final turns, even though I had like 3 models left, if I'd have been able to shift one of the models on your deployment in your deployment zone objective, I'd have still then got a load of primaries. Mm. Yeah. So it was always in the balance, and when it didn't work out, it was because of your tactical objectives. It wasn't because the the battle plans messed things up for you. It's your own tactical decisions that have led you to defeat, which is a much better way of playing the game, isn't it?
It is.
You learn from your mistakes.
I do really like the new match play, and I do like the secondary objectives. The only sort of not concern I've got, it is a bit more involved now. There's a lot more for a player to think about going into a match play game, I think. And I think as you play more 9th edition match play games, it will probably become less of an issue. But certainly to start with, I do feel a bit overwhelmed that you've got to read through each of the secondary objectives to see which one is probably going to be best suited for this game. And if you make a mistake there and choose the wrong secondary objectives, potentially you've lost the game before you've even started. I think that will become less of a problem as you get used to the secondary objectives and as you get used to playing games of 9th. But certainly when I first look at the match play missions now, I do think you've got to think really carefully about those secondary objectives, because they're just as important as the primary.
Yeah, definitely. It's a big change. And you, like you say, if you're doing this competitively, you need to know those secondaries inside out and know, which ones are best picking, because somewhere you can score a fraction of the points you can in others. However, if they're safe objectives and you can reliably stop your opponent from getting their secondaries, then, well, maybe you do just go for the ones that only give you 4 points each.
Hmm.
Because they're guaranteed points.
Yeah. And that, I think that boils down to experience. I think you're going to have to get a lot, but regular games of 9th in against different opponents to really get a feel for how those secondary objectives play in game and which ones are too risky for your particular army to play for, which ones you can, are pretty, they sort of mesh well with your army and your build.
Go on, Dave. Sorry, Jay. No, sorry, carry on.
I was just going to say, I wonder whether, we never played open play missions ever in 8th edition. I wonder whether we will probably play a few more open play missions now where you don't have to worry about secondary objectives. It's more of a straightforward game where you've just got the mission objective, like a traditional game of Warhammer 40,000 from like back in 3rd edition when we first started playing. I wonder if open play will see more casual sub, because it's still balanced. You can still play to points levels. The missions are still fun, but it's not as intense as the match play where you have to really optimize those secondary objectives.
Yeah, I think they've made a real differentiation between the three ways of playing, haven't they?
Yeah.
The match play is super high-end competitive, really have to think about what you're doing in games of Warhammer, where obviously Crusade, you've then got the fluffy kind of RPG element. It's a bit more kind of lighthearted, isn't it? Not saying it's not a tactical challenge, but yeah, you're not spinning as many plates at the same time, are you?
That's it. You're not. No. And I think that issue will disappear the more games we get in with 9th, but certainly to start with, yeah, I think Crusade and Open are a bit more relaxed. And certainly Crusade is just fun. I mean, even if you lose the game, after the game, you're rolling on all your tables to see what's happened, your experience for your units, you're leveling up, you're thinking about how you're going to expand your army. Crusade's a lot of fun. And I mean, Crusade does have that element. You've got those secret agendas. But even with those secret agendas, you don't necessarily have to choose the most powerful one or the one that's going to win you the game. You could just go, because you're running a Crusade and it's all about the narrative, you can just take the secret agendas that you want to sort of play as you telling the story for your army.
Well, that's the core difference, isn't it? The agendas in Crusade don't in any way help you win the mission. They're just based around getting experience for your units that you want to level up.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, that segues quite nicely. So after our intense, no holes barred game of match play. You guys have had a game of Crusade, haven't you, a couple of days ago?
Yes, we did. So I was really looking forward to starting my Death Card army and taking them to the field of battle. I've got a post on the website where I discuss my starting warband for this Crusade. I've given all my characters names. But I did not have an easy foe to begin with because Jane decided to bring your Adeptus Custodians to the game.
Well, I've been wanting to get these back on the table with their Psychic Awakening book with all the strats, all the new strategems they've got and the Shield Host rules. In addition to that, the fact that 9th edition now gives me more command points. And certainly in a game of Crusade, where you don't need to worry about upgrading your units with those before battle use stratagems as well, you can do that with requisition points. You have a lot more, and you're getting the command point back every turn now. So mm-hmm. you're starting. We played a combat patrol, no, incursion mission, didn't we? 1,000 mm-hmm. points, 50 power level. And we start the game with 6 command points, and then in the first command phase, well, in every command phase, you get an extra command point back. So I was able to make use of a load of strats in the Psychic Awakening and Adeptus Custodes Codex that I've not been able to use throughout the entire of 8th. I mean, I'd be lucky if I got one or two killer stratagems off during the course of a game with the Custodes, which is a shame because there's some really nice ones in there that look really cool to use, but you just can't sacrifice your limited resource of CP. Whereas now in 9th, that CP isn't such a bottleneck for the Custodes.
No.
And it really made them tricky to deal with, I think, Dave.
It most certainly did. I did think before it even started it was going to be a bit of a challenge. And you mentioned the agendas earlier. They were quite challenging to pick. And for some, well, because you had your little palace vehicle and your little in your dreadnought, I thought, well, that dreadnought definitely needs to go down quite early because I played against it before with other armies. It's always a nightmare.
Yeah, kill
so I thought I'd pick taking the vehicle one out. And I never did kill it in 5 turns.
No. Well, that's it. And you didn't kill it because of all the new stratagems that Custodians get. So there's some cool ones which reduce the damage the Dreadnought takes. There's a cool one which gives the Dreadnought or any vehicle a 5+ feel no pain sort of save. And then there's even stratagems which mess around with the opponent's plans. So the Emperor's Auspice, a fantastic stratagem, which basically when a Custodian unit is targeted for an attack, it cost me 2 command points, but 2 command points was fine. I had 7 at the time. The opponent can benefit from no reroll granting effects while they're targeting that unit for the entire phase. So all of your plague weapons, your rerolling ones for next to your Terminator Lord, all those sort of abilities just don't work against that unit. So that really sort of nobbled your attacks against the Dreadnought and allowed the Dreadnought to, I think he took 2 wounds, didn't he, from pretty much your entire army fighting him, shooting him and fighting him because
yeah.
I popped that strategic twice.
Well, I positioned, because we had, you know, a healthy amount of scenery and stuff, I positioned everything to basically take out this Dreadnought turn one. Like you say, I did 2 damage to it because I got everything in aura range, in reroll range, and then, you know, I spent a couple of stratagems to, you know, make my bolters plague weapons and stuff, and then it was all really for nothing. So yeah, it was quite a shock.
I think a lot of the new Adeptus Custodian stratagems, they all seem to be about just, it almost reminds me a little bit of the Eldar. They're just annoying stratagems, and I sort of get the impression, you know, Adeptus Custodians, they're the best of the best of the best that the Imperium can field in battle. They've got the best technology, they have the best generals, the best, you know, warriors, and all these little stratagems just sort of add to that lore behind the Custodian, really, you know, the background of the army, I find. So there's some cool ones in there that reduce the strength of incoming weapons, reduce the charge distances and movement distances of opponent units, that can really just foil an opponent's battle plan, and it basically just gives you the edge in the battle, I think, because you've got limited numbers, although those limited numbers didn't really show against your Death Guard because you had quite an elite army that you'd brought to the Crusade as well.
I did. I had a Plague Burst Crawler in the Blight Hall, the 2 units of 5 Plague Marines and quite a few characters, but it was more about, again, this is Crusade, it was what I wanted to start with, in what, you know, my Crusade can build upon. what I'd really enjoyed was all the sort of experience points and stuff that came after it. And already you're starting to write a little bit of lore for your characters. So if you take, for example, my Chaos Lord, he didn't do an awful lot of damage, although he was the only thing that Dolgoth, this is the only thing that actually damaged your Dreadnought, but you could not kill him. Which is exactly what a Death Guard character should be like.
At one point, I did 12 damage to him from my shield captain in Alaris Terminator Army. He dealt 12 damage to him. You failed your saves. Oh, no, you'd made 4 invulnerable saves, hadn't you? I can't remember. You took 12 damage, and you passed all of those disgustingly resilient rolls.
I passed enough to, because he'd not taken a point of damage at that time. So those 12 damage, I rolled 12 dice for disgustingly resilient, and I saved enough of them for him to be left with one wound. Mm. And then he was left on that one wound for ages.
Yeah, couldn't finish with a Dreadnought and a... Well, the Dreadnought was sort of slaying all of the Plague Marines and characters that were coming into combat to sort of rescue him, and the Shield Captain was just having a one-on-one duel with the Terminator Lord and just couldn't put him down. And then in the end, it was the Blight Hauler blowing up that took the wound off him, which was funny. The mission was cool as well. The missions, they sort of have a real sort of narrative feel to them as well. So this mission was Sabotage, where there's an attacker and a defender, and the attacker has to get to these objective points and destroy them. Every objective that the attacker manages to destroy, they get victory points for. Every objective that the defender manages to defend for the whole battle, they get victory points for. And then there was also victory points for killing more units than the opposing army. But it really felt like my Adeptus Custodes were sort of a strike force sent to quickly neutralize these key assets in the Death Guard's territory and get out as fast as they can. I'm looking forward to developing that story into the next Crusade mission. And we've basically agreed that Dolgoth he disappeared in a suspicious puff of Nurgle gore, so he's not dead yet, he's just vanished.
Well, what I was lucky, because you did table me, let's be brutal here, I killed 2 custodian guards, so I didn't even take out a unit of custodies, so Jade didn't have to roll on any injury charts at the end of the game, whereas I had to roll for every single one of my units. But luckily didn't roll a single one.
Yeah, you did all right. To be fair, throughout the game, your saves were pretty good. You were making some good saves. It's just you having to make a lot of them. But
yeah, to be honest, I think turn one was probably some of the worst dice rolling I've ever done, which was unfortunate. But it was still really fun. And at the end of the game, even though I lost, every unit gets a point of experience, and you still get to pick. I can't remember what the term is, but basically your MVP. And seeing as he was the only one that actually killed anything, my playcaster got leveled up, and he's got an extra deny now. I rolled on his psychic fortitude chart, and he got an extra deny. So
You chose a secret agenda for him, didn't you? Which was Lord of Warpcraft. So you of the amount of psychic powers you managed to get off during the course of battle, and the psychic that got the most powers off had the highest tally would get this experience at the end of the game. As long as you don't perils, which you did peril at one point, but you were able to recover that with a command reroll.
Well, yeah, I mean, in that first turn, I used a command reroll on that perils. I used a command reroll on a damage roll because I think I rolled a 1, and I rerolled a charge, and I rerolled a morale as well. So I was failing everything.
Yeah.
Not to be controversial, can you reroll the perils?
Yes, we checked because we did. We had a look at that to say, because we know that what you can actually reroll with that command reroll stratagem has changed now. Yeah, so perils and psychic tests and deny the witch test you can reroll, but you have to reroll the whole dice. You can't the whole roll. You can't reroll those.
Yeah.
I've only ever played. I haven't played any match play 9th edition yet. I've watched you guys play. Dave, you've played 9th edition match play and 9th edition Crusade now. In my opinion, I get the impression that Crusade is a bit less intense in that you can enjoy it more and just go with the flow without having to worry too much about being super efficient with your moves and your shooting and your combat. What do you think? You've played both systems.
I would agree with that comment. It was fun. I wouldn't say stressful is not the right word. When I was playing Matt, it felt more competitive. And when I was thinking about what I was going to do, my mind was constantly thinking about the secondary objectives. And because Matt had such a large force, and you quite rightly, Matt, picked a lot of your secondaries to feed into the primaries. So you're kind of doing two in one go.
Yeah.
So I felt that I had to do well on my secondaries because it was going to be hard to... Well, you're just so fast. You were on the three objectives so quickly.
It was a double-edged sword, though. So the first couple of turns, while I was going good, I was raking in the points. But I couldn't afford to lose those primary objectives because then that would also affect my secondary objective income as well. Because you had secondaries from other sources, that gave you the upper hand. And like Jay said, it's gonna take a few games to weigh up. Wow, do I want three secondaries that tie into pushing on these objectives, or do I keep something back that, you know, I can get in case everything goes wrong?
All your eggs in one basket, rather than spreading the risk out a little bit.
One of the secondaries I did pick was First Strike, which when you look at it on paper, you can only get a maximum of 8 victory points, which is, you know, compared to some of the other secondaries, isn't a lot. But I felt that it was one that I was more safer getting. So I'm not saying it was a guaranteed 8 points, but it felt like
it's more guaranteed confident than the way. 15.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. And I was lucky in that I actually scored all 8 for that secondary objective as well. What you were saying about, obviously, how you're thinking about all these secondaries, I think one thing that I am going to need to take to every match play game is a pen and paper to keep a tally of what I'm scoring on secondaries, because like you said, Matt, you've got maximum numbers that you can achieve in your objectives, and I think it's just going to take a bit more bookkeeping. So it's a little bit more challenging, but I suppose that's match play should be tactical, and match play should be competitive and require more thought. And, you know, do you put stuff into strategic reserve? Do you spend CP on this, that, and the other before the game starts? I enjoyed both games. If I'm honest, yes, I think Crusade could be what I might really enjoy this edition. But that's not to say I didn't enjoy match play, because it was really, really fun.
Yes, I mean, I've been lucky enough to play both match play.
Of course you have. Sorry, Matt, you have.
And they both feel like different types of games, which is a really good sign for the new edition that they've been able to separate them so much. Because let's face it, in 8th edition, it was either match play or make it up as you go along, essentially, was the rules for narrative, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I really enjoyed the narrative Crusade side. I think, like you say, those little stories, the Plasmancer having his bit of a duel with the Judicia, and then rightly so getting blind in his one eye. It's just, I think different people are going to take to different side to that scale. Your hardcore tournament players are going to very much enjoy match play because it is a lot more involved and rewarding, I suppose, rewards your play style, where your Crusade is a bit more lighthearted, but it's still decent missions. It's not like it's a watered down version of the game.
No, well, the mission was really interesting. And that's it. At the end of the day, I came away from that Crusade game, and even though Dave was tabled, I mean, it's not very... Normally, if you get tabled in a game of Warhammer 40,000, especially in match play, only one person's had a good game, good experience in that game. Whereas, even though Dave lost every model, I think it's fair to say, Dave, you still had a cracking time playing that game.
Yeah, it was still really fun.
We both came away from that game Warhammer really satisfied with that game of Warhammer, which is what you want, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I can't wait to have another game of match play or Crusade, to be honest. It's going to be a really good weekend, this launch of Indomitus, and more people getting to play 9th edition, and yeah, should be really good. Right. Well, that's enough chatter about 9th edition. We're going to be moving on to our top three in just a moment. Before I move on, actually, just to mention, mine and Matt's game, the Adeptus Mechanicus versus the Sisters, that is available on our YouTube channel. I will put the link in the description so that you can check that out. So what top three units would we like to add to our armies now we're going into 9th edition? Matt, do you want to start us off with your third choice?
So I've obviously been painting the Necrons out of Indomitus, and I'm absolutely in love with them. But the model that I really, really, really love is the Canoptic Doomstalker. So this is, you know, it's got vibes of War of the Worlds. It's a massive Necron construct with a Doomsday Blaster mounted on its back. Essentially, the purpose of this giant, weird walker jellyfish thing is just to lug around this massive gun, which I imagine kind of is a heat ray out of War of the Worlds. And I'm having three of these in my army, regardless of points, regardless of detachments. They're going in. Everything else can fit around them.
I want you to be playing War of the Worlds music every time I play your Necrons.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that is going to happen.
It does like an awesome. Do you think that cannon's going to be very similar to the Doomsday cannon for the Necrons?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a bigger version of the Doomsday cannon.
Bigger? Wow.
The Doomsday cannon's massive. It's like the whole length of one of those ghost arms.
Well, isn't it? Or Doomsday Blaster. It's going to have a similar effect, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think it will. Yeah. Pain for your opponent is what it's going to do. Yeah. My third choice. Bearing in mind the new rules for 9th edition and such, I'm really looking forward to adding another Tyrannophex to my Tyranids. Because at the moment, I've only got the one with the rupture cannon, which is really cool. But there's an alternative build for the Tyrannophex where you can give it Acid Spray, which is an 18-inch heavy 2d6 automatically hitting strength 7 on his top profile weapon that does D3 damage each. Yeah, at minus one AP. Now, that's cool anyway, but then you realise that you can use that in combat.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's just, yeah. I don't think anybody really took that before, but I definitely want to pick up another one to do that, because I'll just charge it forward. You know, toughness 8, 14 wounds. He's going to want to get in combat just to spray his acid everywhere.
Well, that's it. That's what the problem with Necrons. You giant gribbly space aliens that clearly want to be in combat eating something had to lurk back to fire the weapons.
Yeah. Yeah. So they won't have to in this new edition. So, yeah, that's one big Tyranid monster I want to add that variant of. Your third choice, Jay?
My third choice. So I'm getting very excited now to start painting some Blood Angels. And get the Blood Angel Primaris Force going. So I started a while back with some Primaris scale Sanguinary Guard. I've painted up Sanguinius. I've got a Blood Angel Lieutenant. I really want to add Mephiston next. Mephiston will be the Primaris Blood Angel character leading the Blood Angels into 9th edition. It's a really, really cool model, and I don't know why I haven't bought him before now, really. So, yeah, Mephiston.
I think he's an awesome model. He's really cool.
I think I'm going to build him where he's like wiping blood away from his nose, and he just looks quite cool.
Yeah.
Plus, I suffer from hay fever a lot, so I can relate.
Awesome. Your second choice, Matt?
So, it's no secret that I've been wanting to do a White Scars army for a while, and the only thing that's held me back is the lack of Primaris bikes. Well, what do you know? We've got Primaris Bikers now, and I'll be adding all of the fast attack to my Space Marines. So Outriders, ATVs, hopefully that pixelated Land Speeder will finally show itself maybe this weekend as well. So yeah, I think for match play, like we said earlier, mobility is going to be a big part to get these objectives, and you know, some of the secondaries involve being in different quarters of the board, which will be really easy to do with an army of bikes.
Mm.
So, yeah, and they're going to look cool as well. So all the bikes, all the time is my number two choice.
Excellent. My second choice, because combat has had a big boost in this edition. And combat is something that my Adeptus Mechanicus don't have a lot of. So I really want to add next to my ad mech are some Fulgrite Electro Priests. These are your funky disco stick wielding mad crazy priests that just want to get into combat. I think these will be really cool in the new edition, especially with the helping of cover as well, so they're less likely to get shot to pieces before they actually get into combat. Or I'll probably pick up one of the new Dune Riders and stick them in that and then throw them up the battlefield. And the models get quite a lot of stick online, but actually I quite like them. I think they're quite cool. They're very different than all the other AdMech stuff that I've got painted. So I think they'd add a nice bit of variety to the army. I know you used to have some, I think, Matt.
Yeah, I quite liked them.
Yeah. They just look like nutters, don't they? They're like crazy AdMech sort of like religious fanatics.
Yeah. Yeah, lore-wise, they've got like subdermal tattoos that conduct electricity as well.
Excellent.
What could possibly go wrong there?
So yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to adding next to my AdMech. Jay, your second choice.
My second choice is an Adeptus Custodian unit. I've always liked the look of these models, but I've never used them in my Custodes army, but I'm tempted to add a few units now, especially with the Psychic Awakening strats that I think will benefit them a lot. And it's the Venatari Custodians. These are the jump pack Custodian guard unit, basically, with the really cool pistol and mini sort of storm shield type thing. They add a bit more mobility to a Custodian army, although nowadays the Custodes can be quite mobile with the deep striking mechanic that they've got, that stratagem they can use to put something into deep strike. They've got their Alaris Terminators, and of course now in 9th edition you can go into reserve and come on from a board edge. You know, they have got a few more options now, Adeptus Custodes, but these Venatari, I think they have a cool pistol which is strength 6, AP minus 2, damage 2, 2 shots, and on a 6 to hit it generates an extra hit. So a unit of 3 of them are getting 6 shots, hitting on 2, strength 6, AP minus 2, damage 2, at 18 inches. So no matter where they come in from deep strike, which they can do natively, it's on their data sheet, you're getting 6 shots off. So on average, you're going to get an additional shot, 7 shots hitting on 2s. And then there's the stratagem, which lets you double the number of shots you can make with a pistol or rapid fire weapon. So you're now, 3 models are now getting 12 shots. With extra hits on 6s, hitting on 2s. I think that can pump out a surprising amount of DACA for a little pistol armed unit of 3 models. Yeah, and definitely. Then if they do get into combat, I mean, they are Adeptus Custodes, so they're no slouches in combat. You can also fire your pistols in combat, so as well as your buckler attacks, you're getting attacks from your pistols too. So I think there's going to be room for the Venatari Custodians in my 2000-point Adeptus Custodes list, at least some of them.
Nice. Very cool. We're round to our top choices. Matt, what is yours?
Well, I've got an Evil Sons force, and there's nothing Evil Sons like than going fast, very, very fast. The army's pretty quick at the minute. You know, your Megatrack scrap jets, your boom Dacker snaz wagons. But it's missing just something. And I think what it probably is missing is about 4 aircraft of various flavours.
Yes.
To roar through the sky, unleashing devastation on poor unfortunate people below. I think flyers have had a big improvement in 9th edition. And in our game, your flyer was awesome, wheeling around the battlefield and dropping bombs on units. So I feel a bomber and a kind of interceptor in a lot of lists would be really handy to take out those key units and take out any flyers that are trying to get yours. And it just fits with the Evil Sons. They want to go fast. So, you know, an orc in a truck is dangerous. Whack some wings and a propeller on it and, yeah, let him have his way.
Didn't they get a really cool stratagem in, I think it might have been in the Psychic Awakening, where you can actually choose to crash your plane and do mortal wounds? I mean, obviously you lose your plane, but
you do a load of mortal wounds. Do you? It's worth it. That's why I've got to call 4 of them. That's the hardest bit picking between the burner bomber, the blitzer bomber, the Dacker jet, and the Waz boom blaster jet. I mean, they've all got awesome names, so I'm sure I can squeeze them in somewhere.
Awesome. My top choice is a biggie, and I wanted him anyway, but 9th edition just seems like a really good excuse to do so, and that is, I want to pick up Mortarion, the Primarch of the Death Guard. We're gonna soon have the Silent King stalking around the battlefield. Jay, you've already got Gulliman doing his thing with your Ultramarines. I think I need a big demon Primarch to take out some of these threats. And I think he is gonna be quite useful in the new edition as well, because I could choose to bring him on for strategic reserves. lessening the chance of him dying turn one. Well, he won't be able to die turn one. Yeah, you won't get much use out, you know, not the whole game out of him. But when he does come on, you know, he's a massive threat. Yeah, and it also, your opponent's going to be thinking, where is this massive Demon Primarch going to come on? So hopefully, you know, a little bit of mind games there as well. Plus, he's an incredible model. Absolutely superb. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to, maybe, you know, as the Crusade goes on, Mortarion might think, these guys are pretty good, actually, you know. I might come give them a hand. Or after that first game, you might be thinking, these guys are rubbish. They obviously need me. Yeah, we'll see how that Crusade pans out. But yeah, Mortarion's my top choice. Jay, do you want to finish us off with your top choice?
Yeah, well, you're gonna have to get Mortarion, because Gulliman is gonna be leading my my Ultramarines into match play games for sure. He's just too good in an Ultramarines army to not include, I think. Whether he shows his face in the Crusade or not, possibly if there's Demon Primarch showing up, but he's definitely going into my match play Ultramarines army. My top choice for models that I want to add to my 9th edition armies, I'm going to cheat a little bit, because about 3 or 4 hours ago, I actually bought this model to add to my 9th edition army. So Matt is already talking about ramping up the air wars with the addition of 3 or 4 orc fighters to the battlefields of our games of 9th edition. The Adeptus Custodes have got to step up to that threat. So I have ordered a Legio Custodes Ares gunship.
Jeez, such a nice model.
It's a
escalation.
I've just got the data sheet in front of me nowadays. So it's 21 power level, 430 points kitted out currently. It's basically a flying land raider. It's toughness 8, 22 wounds. It has a 3+ save, a 5+ invulnerable save. It's still supersonic. It has to pivot 90 inches on the spot, and then it can move. How far can it move, Dave? 50 inches, between 20 and 50 inches. So, you know, and it can also go into hover mode as well if you want it to.
You know, having to move 90 degrees and then basically hurtle off the board isn't as bad as it used to be, because he can just come on the next turn and shoot something anyway.
Yeah, that's it. And it's basically, it's like a bomber anti-tank hunter type flyer. So it doesn't get many shots. It's got 2 Arachnus heavy blaze cannons, which have got alternate firing modes. So you can either fire them as heavy 1, where they are basically a las cannon that can reroll wounds against vehicles and do a minimum of 4 damage, so between 4 and 6 damage. You get 2 of those, or you can fire them in burst modes, where they basically turn into auto cannons, I think. Twin-linked auto cannons, 4 shots, strength 7, AP -2, 1 damage. So I'm not sure you'll ever make use of that secondary burst mode. But certainly 2 strength 9, AP -4, D3 +3 damage, rerolling wounds is a useful thing to have, especially when anti-tank is sort of one of the weaknesses in an Adeptus Custodes army. There's not much ranged anti-tank that you can take. The big weapon on the model is the Arachnus Magna Blaze cannon, which also gets a beam and a burst profile. We won't talk about the burst profile, it's not that impressive, but the beam profile, my word. Heavy D3, strength 14, AP -4, D3 +6 damage. That's going to be taking down some vehicles. That's the plan anyway. And then it also gets to drop a bomb, similar to your fusillade, is it? The Adeptus Mechanicus bomber. So you basically fly over a unit, you can roll a D6 for each model in the unit, or 3D6 if it's a vehicle, up to a maximum of 20 D6, and each 4+ is a mortal wound. And it can do that twice per battle. So not once every turn, but twice per battle.
That is, and does it hit on 2s like every other custodian?
Oh yeah, it's a custodian. It hits on 2s, 2+. It even hits on 2s in close combat. No, I'm joking. although it does get 6 strength 8 attacks, although I don't think you can charge with flies in 9th edition, can you? Can't charge or be charged.
You can't make a move into base contact with any other model. So yeah, I think some things might be able to charge them, maybe, but I think by the rules, yeah, you can't get an engagement range of a flyer. It doesn't need to. It just shoots you with that Arachnus Blaze Cannon, doesn't it?
Yeah, Arachnus Magna Blaze Cannon. Yeah. Oh, so, yeah, I've added, that's my flyer to my Adeptus Custodes. And I've been writing some lists. I've written a 2,000-point Adeptus Custodes list that I want to try and match play. Really happy with it. It seems like it's a really threatening list for the opponent's face, because there's a couple of units in there that are really tough. The Ares gunship is one of them that are really tough. So they're going to have to take a bit of dedication from the opponent to take them down. So they're going to, you know, they're going to have to fire quite a lot of shots into them to turn them down. And but they can't risk ignoring them, because they're quite, they do a lot of damage back if they're ignored. So I think that might let the infantry sort of get away from a bit more of the heavy weapons that were targeting them previously.
I mean, you've called it a flying land raid. I'd call it a flying knight, really.
Yeah, flying knight. Yeah, 22 wounds. It's the same sort of wounds as a knight, isn't it, I suppose?
Yeah. Oof, not looking forward to facing that. But, yeah, still look forward to seeing you give it a paint job, Jay, when that turns up. We aren't quite finished with the podcast, because when we come back after this pause, we've got the community top three. Before we finish off this week's podcast, we do, of course, have the community top three picks. We're going to head over to Facebook, first of all. So Horde Master says they've been making lots of Necron units ready for 9th, but the top ones to be added are as follows. So their third choice is the new Monolith. Their second choice is the Silent King. And their top choice is the Void Dragon. I have to be honest, when this Void Dragon comes out, when we find it very hard not to build a small force of Necrons, because I just love it. It's an amazing model. Eddie Booth says, since I first picked up the Necron 7 years ago, I've always wanted a proper Void Dragon model. I'll be buying that the second it releases and when my bank balance allows. So just the one choice from Eddie. Brian Dennis simply says Primaris Landspeeder times 3. He hasn't even seen him yet. Daz Brain says the Flash Kits and Grot Tanks for my new Orc army. Ooh. And he would also like Vect. And he hopes that it could potentially get a new model and rules to go with that as well. Ian Brown, however, has just simply replied with a GIF that says all of them, just everything.
Fair enough.
On to Twitter, Matt.
Well, over on Twitter, Pete Allison, bits for his Sons of the Phoenix. So Chaplain on a bike, because it's a classic reimagination of the old model. It is, isn't it? It's really cool. The new Marine Buggy, a.k.a. Tumbler, and the Redempted Rednought. Vincent Notley wants to add Locust Heavy Destroyers, Doomstalkers, and Assault Intercessors to his various armies. Fabius Fulgrim, no surprise here. Phoenix Guard Terminators, Noise Marines, and Fulgrim.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
Lord Andrew Dennett, starting Primaris for the first time, but especially looking forward to Assault Interceptors and the Judicia. And then for their Dark Angels? Dark Eldar, Vect. Mm. Heretic Wargaming, the Land Raider Crusader, Talon Master, and the new Outriders. Immortan Joe, Janus is a Grey Knight Lord of War, a Judicia, because there's no fury quite like excessive fury, and the Outrider bikes. The chunky models made me really fall in love with them on site. Yeah, I love the Outriders. Speaking of which, Roman Ruin says, those sweet Outriders, those sweeter Eradicators, and the sweetest Primaris Tech Marine. I'd forgotten about him.
Oh, yeah, he's got two sort of builds to him, hasn't he, where he's sort of like doing a bring it on type thing with his hand, and has he got a pistol or something in the other hand?
He looks ace. Andy Wood says, a Bloodthirster, a Night Crusader, and Typhus. That's crossing the streams with the Chaos there. And then Intergalactic Arts and Crafts. Hi, long time listener, first time caller. Hi, just starting an Orc army for my son's 10th birthday. So they want to add a new War Boss model, a different Pain Boy or Weird Boy, and a ton of Orc boys. That sounds like a really fun thing to do for a 10th birthday.
Yeah. Excellent. What is our next week's top three, Matt?
So there's a little box coming out on Saturday. You might not have heard about it. So we want to know next week are your top three models from the Indomitus box.
Excellent.
All of them. Spoilers.
All of them. you can get your choices in early via our social media at Sprues and Brews or over on Facebook. And yeah, I think that wraps us up for another week. So I did mention it earlier on. Our latest battle report is on YouTube, the Adeptus Mechanicus versus the Adeptus Soritas. Jay, you're also putting up a written report from our Death Guard versus Custodians. So that'll be on in the next few days. So there's lots of content coming, and we'll, of course, be back in the airwaves next week with our next podcast. So until then, have a good week. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Sprues and Brews podcast. Make sure you check out our social media at Sprues and Brews on Twitter and facebook.com/Sprues and Brews. And of course, you can always head over to the website, spruesandbrews.com, for all the latest Warhammer news.